Welcome in, podcast listeners. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. We've got a loaded show for you. Shannon Spake swings by to hang out in the first hour of the program, followed by Jeff Schwartz, and then we get into an interesting situation in Bristol, Virginia. I think you're going to enjoy it, the absurdity of many COVID regulations. Plus, we're talking about the life and legacy of Rush Limbaugh and a radio icon, one of the most talented people to ever do it. I think the most influential of all time. I appreciate all of you hanging out with us. The podcast begins now.
Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Another winter storm warning has hit in Nashville. We hadn't had one in 5 years. We've had two within the space of a couple of days. As a result of the weather conditions, I was looking at the map. And I don't know about you guys, but I think there are a lot of you, a massive number of you out there that usually don't care as much about pitchers and catchers reporting that because it is frigid basically across the entire country, wherever you are living, it is pretty crazy to think about the impact of this cold right now. State of Texas, lots of places that aren't ordinarily cold. Like I was reading an article, once in 100 years level cold for a prolonged period of time for the state of Texas. Where I am, it spent all day and all through the night snowing and all different sorts of issues, which never happens in Nashville. Kids are going to be out of school for the entire week here. They were back in person. So all of that drama out there, I was scheduled to be down in Mexico this week. That's not happening. I am still here hanging out with you. Let me give you a little bit of a roadmap of where we are headed. We're going to talk with Shannon Spake in the next segment. Jeff Schwartz scheduled to hang out with us in the second hour of the show. That is where we are headed. I wanted to hit a little bit off the top here on some of the drama that continues to build around Deshaun Watson. And you guys know, I love the NFL free agent quarterback drama. We talked about earlier this week all of the different free agents that are available out there, and I ranked them for you. If you missed that, I said there are a lot of people out there that hope they're going to be able to find their own version of Ryan Tannehill. And there are a lot of first-round guys that are available if you kind of break them down in terms of, hey, these are guys who theoretically could be grabbed, whether it's your Sam Darnolds of the world, whether it is Marcus Mariota, whether it's Jameis Winston. There are a lot of guys over time that have been proven at the quarterback position that are going to be available. And here were the way, by the way, that I ranked them, former first rounders who will be available: Sam Darnold, Carson Wentz, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, Teddy Bridgewater, Mitch Trubisky, Cam Newton, Dwayne Haskins, all those guys are out there. But the drama continues to build around Deshaun Watson, and the latest discussion point has focused on whether or not the Carolina Panthers and Matt Rhule are really as aggressively pursuing the idea of Deshaun Watson as possible, because the report that came out was that the Carolina Panthers would give up 3 first-round picks plus Christian McCaffrey in order to get Deshaun Watson. And the question that's out there is that a good trade for the Carolina Panthers? In other words, all things considered, for the Panthers and for the Texans, is this a good trade? Is it a decision that would make sense? And to me, the answer is yes for the Carolina Panthers, even with 3 first-rounders and even with the requirement, in theory, that they give up Christian McCaffrey. And let me explain why I think that would make a lot of sense. First of all, as good as Christian McCaffrey is, if you are going to be the Houston Texans and you're going to go with a young quarterback, there's a strong likelihood that by the time you find another quarterback who could be anywhere near as good as Deshaun Watson, Christian McCaffrey's career could well be over. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter with any running back. The longevity there is much to be questioned. Second, who's to say that the Houston Texans for the next 20 years are ever going to have a quarterback as good as Deshaun Watson? All you have to do, if you are an NFL fan, is look at the sad story of the Miami Dolphins since Dan Marino's career was over. They have spent nearly a quarter century, maybe over a quarter century now, trying to replace Dan Marino. I'm sorry, Dolphin fans, for coming off the top rope on you right now. They have spent a quarter century trying to replace Dan Marino in Miami, and so far, they have not been able to do it. Now, I hope Tua is the answer. My son got to meet Tua back in the spring. Tua was fantastic with him. By all reports, he has been a great dude in the locker room and everything else surrounding him. The challenge is, once you have a proven guy, though, you should never let him go. And that has been the storyline of the NFL over this past generation. The only guys that end up winning at a high level and have won Super Bowls after being drafted by somebody other than the team that they win the Super Bowl for are guys that have had serious health issues. Peyton Manning, nobody knew whether or not he was going to be able to continue to play at a high level. He goes to Denver, he wins the Super Bowl. Drew Brees, nobody knows if he's going to be able to play at a high level coming off the San Diego Chargers. He goes to New Orleans, he wins the Super Bowl. The reclamation project that is Ryan Tannehill is insanely rare. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not a lot of teams that could hope that they could find their own version of Ryan Tannehill, and there aren't a lot of teams that are out there saying, hey, the solution to our problem is maybe to be found in the free agent market as opposed to the draft. But if Deshaun Watson were to be traded, this would truly be something the likes of which we've never seen before. Now, some people say, well, we just saw Jared Goff traded for Matthew Stafford, different level. The Rams didn't trade Jared Goff convinced that he was their quarterback of the future. In fact, it was the exact opposite. Matthew Stafford spent 12 years in Detroit. That was a rare trade, and we spent a lot of time talking about it, and it's going to be incredibly intriguing to see how it shakes out. But that is an aberration, and really it was representative of the fact that the Rams are not real believers in Jared Goff, despite the fact that they spent big money on him. So if the Carolina Panthers were able to make that trade, the odds of the Houston Texans finding a quarterback in the draft of Deshaun Watson's caliber are very low. And so the pressure that would be existing on the Houston Texans' next quarterback that they drafted would be off the charts as well. Think about whoever the first rounder that Houston brought in to replace Deshaun Watson. It's always difficult for any first round draft pick in the NFL to come into a city and try to fulfill the expectations of being a first round draft pick. Put that on steroids. I mean, honestly, put it on steroids if you had to come in and replace Deshaun Watson, who's only 25 years old. Now, I do think that if you're breaking it down in a larger context, if the Texans are going to make this trade, they have to make the trade and get Deshaun Watson sent to the NFC. That's one of the things that I've said from the moment this started. You can't trade Deshaun Watson into the AFC and spend the next 10 to 12 years or more trying to prove that you can get past Deshaun Watson in the AFC. And if you're ever there in the playoffs, in the divisional round, the wild card, or God forbid, the AFC championship game, and you ended up losing to the quarterback that you traded away, I don't think you would ever be able to get over that decision for the franchise. So, look, as crazy as it might sound, I like the idea of the Carolina Panthers giving up three first-rounders and Christian McCaffrey. I would vote for the Carolina Panthers having traded and made a good decision if Matt Rhule and the Panthers were able to make that happen. When we come back, we're going to be scheduled to be joined by Shannon Spake. We'll talk a little bit about what happened with NASCAR, the NFL, and more with Shannon. She's also been ranked, according to Howard Stern's crew, as one of the most underrated hot women in America. Was she astoundingly excited about that praise? We will discuss. This is OutKick.
This is OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis.
Shannon Spake swings in now. Shannon, have you recovered from basically like a 24-hour workday surrounding the Daytona 500?
No. The answer is no. I still haven't recovered. It was a really, really – I mean, listen – it was a great day. We made a lot of television. It was great to be back just based on how everything was last year. It was so strange. I was in the studio by myself most of the time talking to people remotely. And to have all of us sitting on the desk and up there for pretty much a 20-hour day. I got in hair and makeup on Sunday morning at 6 a.m. And then we were on set at 9 to rehearse for our 11 o'clock show. And we did our last hit at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
But it was a team effort. And you know, this is the thing. I cover other sports, obviously. And covering NASCAR has prepared me for anything and everything that I do because of the fact that they're just really long weekends and really long days. And I am so proud of our entire Fox Sports family, our NASCAR family, for what we did. Because honestly, Clay, like you and I have talked about it, just the amount of content and putting it out there, it's a challenge. And we accepted that challenge, and I thought we did a really good job. And of course, we got the race, and nobody thought at like 8:30 at night we were actually going to get that race in. I was watching the radar, and it was just like green blobs everywhere, and then it broke up. They were actually planning on calling the race. They had already told us that they were going to call the race, and then everything started to break up, and we got the race in. First time winner. I think Michael McDowell has like 300 and something starts in the Cup Series and has never won, and of course he goes out and wins the Daytona 500.
So one of the biggest, I'm going to get to Michael McDowell, who I think was on the show the Tuesday day that I was out. I'll get to in a minute. Thanks to NASCAR for getting him on basically the day after he won the Daytona 500. One of the biggest challenges for people out there who kind of take behind the scenes in the television universe is when you unexpectedly have to fill. And I've done this a few times on television. We do it quite a bit on radio where you expect a guest and then the guest doesn't show up and you have to completely, you know, just cover a segment, which might be 15 minutes or so with the topic that you're not anticipating. For rain delays in the world of sports, and I've done this a few times on television in the college football universe where there's a sudden thunderstorm or lightning or whatever else and there's a multi-hour delay where you suddenly have to fill all the time on the air and you don't necessarily know when you're going to be able to get back. That's one of the most challenging things that happens in television, right? Because it's totally unscripted. There's no real data points that you can follow in terms of what the latest is. And you're just kind of out there having to having to cover all that time.
Yeah, no question. So we did one, I think I told you when we spoke on Monday, we did one segment that it was like 22 minutes. With no commercial break. And we did have some interviews from the racetrack. Regan Smith and Jamie Little were out at the racetrack, but it was like, all right, we come back. I have, you know, a Bobby Labonte and myself and Larry kind of go over some talking points like, hey, why don't we talk about this? Why don't we talk about this? And I set those guys up. So we, you know, listen, I've been doing this for a really long time. You know, one question can get you about a minute 30 out of your two analysts. Two questions can get you to about 2:33 minutes. And then you have a producer in your ear saying, go out to the track, Jamie's with, you know, whoever. And so then I throw out to the racetrack and then we come back. We can oftentimes play off of what that driver said, or we've decided that we're going to move in a different direction. But 20 minutes is a long time to film. It's so funny because at one point we're live and they say, we got Joey Logano on Zoom. So let's go to Joey. We have him on. And of course we didn't know we were going to get Joey. So you're kind of like, okay, what's my first question to him? And it's, you'll laugh at this. So I throw to Joey and I'm like, we got Joey Logano on the Zoom-a-rooney now. And I'm like, what did I just say? Like,
yes.
I just said Zoom-a-rooney. Like, my mind was starting to slip. And as soon as we got off, I was like, I need coffee right now. Get me coffee. Because I just said Zoom-a-rooney, like on air. And I don't even know why I said that, because I think you just get to be like, you get kind of like loopy and you don't really know where you're going and you have to kind of pull it back together mentally. But it was a lot of fill, but it's fun. I love doing that stuff. I love it when we don't really know where we're going to go. I feel like the chaos, I have much more control, and I enjoy sort of flying by the seat of my pants.
We're talking to Shannon Spake. You can follow her on Twitter at Shannon Spake. NASCAR Daytona 500 happening. By the way, the final lap. And so I was tweeting about this because I know it was late at night. But I was curious because the last 10 laps or so, what could happen? Will there be substantial fallout on the track from Joey Logano was set to win the Daytona 500, major event to win. And then I believe Brad Keselowski kind of got up, started to make a move, and one cut off the other. And I'm not an expert on exactly who is to blame, but the result is these guys are teammates, right? They're both Fords, I think, right? And they wipe each other out. I mean, it was chaos, fire, flames, and the 100-1 underdog, who it doesn't seem like anybody anticipated ever being in the mix, is the victorious guy who's basically left standing after the chaos. What's the long-range fallout, if anything, from teammates like that having an incident right at the finish line of basically the Super Bowl of NASCAR?
There will be. You know, there will certainly be hard feelings. Joey has already won a Daytona 500. Brad has not, which I think is a big thing. And Joey was on Race Hub on Tuesday night talking about it, said he hadn't talked to Brad yet, but they will talk. And eventually, what they both have to realize, what Brad has to realize, is that it's a Daytona 500. And, you know, Joey is super aggressive and never apologizes for doing exactly what he needs to do to win a race for his team, for his guys. When he walks back in that hauler, he wants his guys to look at him and know that he did everything possible on that racetrack to get that victory for them. And that's what he does. And sometimes he's overly aggressive, and he'll admit that. I am, because I do what I need to do to win. So Brad will certainly be upset because, you know, he had a chance to win the Daytona 500. But at the same time, if you watch the replay, and Joey said this on Race Hub, Joey's like, I wish I wouldn't have blocked, because he got hit from behind anyways and was going to wreck. And if I hadn't blocked, then maybe I wouldn't have gotten wrecked too. It's the last lap on the Daytona 500. It's the last 25 yards of the Daytona 500. You do what you have to do to try to win the race for you and your team. And that's what the long-term, result with these two will be. Brad will understand, but certainly it'll sting for a while.
We're talking to Shannon Spake. Now, in addition to the Daytona 500 going on, you are a big Howard Stern fan, and evidently with all the race delay and everything else, one positive was on Howard Stern, Ronnie the limo driver has decided that you are criminally underranked in terms of hotness. So did you hear about this listening to the show live, or did somebody tell you about it when he's talking about how good looking you are?
So it was Tuesday morning when this list came out, and I was still recovering from Daytona. So I got my kids off to school and I went back and laid down, and all of a sudden, like, my phone is blowing up. Like, my husband's calling me, my friends are texting me, and they're like, you're blah, 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 you're on Howard Stern. And so I tried to go back and listen to it, and I heard the list, and I heard, like, I don't know what I listened to. Maybe I was halfway asleep, but I didn't hear like the full extent of what Howard said, because later someone sent me the audio and he was like, Shannon Spake, 44 years old, covers NASCAR, you know, has been on the wrap up show. She's a huge fan of the show. One of the coolest things for me was Robin was like, oh, really? And I love Robin. I just think she's such a great, I mean, just, she's amazing, right? For what she's done for so long, sitting in that studio and just her coolness factor. So I was like, this is so cool. And then on Wednesday, again, Howard read my tweet. I'm like, this is so cool. He's saying my name, you know, because I'm a huge Howard Stern fan. And when I have gone on to the wrap-up show, I've never been able to meet him. So this is, I think, the closest that I'll get. But it's really cool. Ronnie's a huge NASCAR fan. He's been at a bunch of races. I know he was watching the other night because we were sharing texts about the race. So yeah, it's very flattering.
So did the top 10 list have a ranking? Like, what did you think of the other women in the top 10 list? Did you know any of them?
Yeah. So Jamie was on there, Jamie Little and Kelly Stavast, who are these three, we all work for NASCAR. He actually had like Gabrielle Union and Jessica Alba at 10, like together, which I'm like, okay. Cause I think Gabrielle Union is drop dead gorgeous. And obviously Jessica Alba, I didn't know the other ones cause they were on Price is Right, I think. And then like some other things. So, and I don't watch Price is Right. So yeah.
We've been watching, by the way, the Price is Right in my house because of the snow that has shut down the city of Nashville. The kids are all home. But I feel like Jessica Alba is pretty well known. And Gabrielle Union, too. So I'm not sure that they were really under the radar. But that is really funny that you made the under the radar Ronnie the Limo Driver. My wife loves Ronnie the Limo Driver because he's got all sorts of ridiculous things that he's gotten into over the years.
I like it when they do Ronnie Puppet and they have like, you know, the Ronnie Puppet and they're just, I mean, it's just so funny. Yeah. Ronnie's great. Again, I've met him in a couple of races. He's really good friends with Kurt Busch. I met him when I went to the wrap up show. I've done that show, I think 4 times now. So I've been on set with Gary and John Hine, which is, it's so cool. You get to walk through the studio and see where Howard kind of sits and Robin sits and all that stuff. It's certainly been a highlight for me.
I'll tell you this. I used to think the idea that you would have a driver was just the height of ridiculousness. But I don't even drive that much. But recently I've been like, I told my wife this the other day and she just rolled her eyes. I was like, I kind of think that I could, like right now, Uber, everybody kind of has their own driver, right?
Yeah.
Like, so if you go out and you get an Uber or whatever else, but it's so much more efficient. Like, so where I live, it might take, I don't know, depending on traffic, 30 minutes for me to get to downtown Nashville. And let's say I have to go to a meeting or I have to go to a dinner or whatever else. I like being in a car, like an Uber. I will get Ubers now pretty regularly because I like to be able to respond to emails and I like to be able to respond to texts and basically work for the whole half hour because otherwise I'm driving and I can't, you know, kind of get out of the normal. You know, it's hard to text or you're not supposed to, I guess, now or whatever, but you can't really be plugged in for that 30 minutes. So that's a full hour of my day if I have to go to a meeting where I'm not being very productive and things can pile up. And so I used to think like the idea of having a driver was ridiculous. Now I'm like, it's probably the single, if you're in the car a decent amount of time, it's probably, if you're a rich person, the single most productive thing you can do in order to make sure that you're able to get as much done as possible.
When I worked at the early show in New York and I was a production assistant and, you know, Brian Gumbel, Jane Clayson were there when I was working there. Julie Chen was there. And I remember some of those folks telling me, like, if you ever get in television and if you ever have this, make sure you get a driver in your contract. And that was in New York, right? So you don't know where they were.
It's hard to park. It's almost impossible. Yeah. Like getting dropped off at the right place matters a big deal.
Well, Los Angeles, you've been on the Fox lot before. Like, how do you even find a parking spot at the Fox lot? Like, you have to go into that building and you have to drive around like you're in a like underground garage.
I think one time I've spent years probably in my life now. I think only one time have I ever had my own car in LA.
Yes,
because
it's crazy.
Because like I stay next door at the hotel and since I started going out, the whole Uber universe has existed. And so I just haven't been concerned about being able to get wherever I need to go. But that is interesting. And that's one of the first times I was like, wow, this is kind of amazing. Fox, you know, has cars waiting for you to get picked up when you get off. At least they did. I don't know if they've had budget cuts since. But, you know, you walk right off and everybody's lined up and they've got it ready to roll. That's pretty awesome. Like when you walk off of an airplane to just be able to have somebody right there waiting for you to get you wherever you need to go.
Yeah, and I have a driver that drives me to the airport. So I have one guy who he was an
Uber driver. Guy every time?
Every time. So it was he was an Uber driver. I think he's been with me for like 4 or 5 years now.
To pick you up?
Correct. Yep. I give him my schedule and I tell him, hey, Friday morning I'm leaving, Sunday evening I'm coming back. These are my times. And he's like, sure, no problem. And like, I literally land, I'm like, just landed, and he pulls right up.
That's actually a smart idea.
To me, like, I know who's bringing me home. I know who's coming to my house, because when I have to hire like a one-off Uber driver, sometimes you just don't know who you're getting in the car with. And sometimes, honestly, after like a long Sunday, I don't want to talk, you know, like I don't want to talk to someone and have a conversation with someone about, you know, and he kind of gets that because he's been with me for a really long time. And it's nice because when you're traveling every single weekend, or even like when I was at ESPN and I would do a Tuesday night basketball game and a Saturday night basketball game, that extra 30 minutes that it takes you to kind of land, walk to your car, find your car, pay out, like I could be home and I'm getting very few, you know, hours with my kids and my husband. And it's the same price, honestly. I mean, he charged me pretty much the same that I would pay for parking, and so it works out perfectly.
What is your Uber rating? Do you know?
Oh, no. I don't even know. And I stopped using Uber. I started using Lyft a lot because I had an Uber driver show up one time, and the side mirror on his car was, like, falling off, and he got out in front of my house and started taping it with Scotch tape to keep it up. And I'm, like, looking at him, I'm like, that's not going to work. And yeah. So I was like, I'm going to start going with Lyft a little bit more than I do with Uber.
It's interesting. Like, Dub, do you have, well, I want Dub's the number here while I'm talking to you. I've thought about it some, and so I'm going in right now. Do you know what an average Uber like rating is? I'm 4.88. Is that good or bad, Dub? Do you have one?
I'm pulling mine up right now. I will say, however,
Can I look it up? I can look mine up too.
Yeah,
guess,
you
right?
should be able. You should be able if you go into your Uber app and you click on up on the upper left corner where it looks like there's like three memo lines. If you click right there, you should be able to go in and see what your number is.
I'm 4.89. However, I have been, I think, permanently removed from the Lyft app due to some shenanigans of some of my buddies back home. So.
So you're better than me, but you can't get an Uber right now? Like you're banned from Uber?
I'm banned from Lyft. I'm 4.89. So
you're basically, is that good or bad? Dub, look it up and see what the ratings are.
What my rating is. We're looking at, I don't even know what this is the password thing.
Oh my goodness. The biggest issue for me in terms of, I don't know if 4.88 is good or bad. I get frustrated if the wait's too long and I just cancel. Right. Like if I see somebody go the wrong direction, I'm like, you're dead to me. And I just cancel. And so I would imagine that I've gotten some negative feedback from drivers because there's nothing worse than like needing to be somewhere and you're standing there looking at your app and you're like, no, you got to turn there. No. Yeah. You know, and they drive by the wrong way and it goes from like your driver is 4 minutes away to your driver is like 11 minutes away. And you're like, no, you just, because there's nothing worse than following along on the GPS. That's why I think I'm a 4.88 because I'll look and I'll be like, oh, you're supposed to, oh no, don't turn there. And so like you're 4 minutes away and then they go to 11 minutes away and like you're standing there and you're like, there's just a lot of incompetence on it. So did you find out what your rating is, Shannon?
I don't know if I have the – it won't let me see it on the computer, and I don't even know if I have the app down – oh, here it is. Yeah, but of course, like these iPhones, they update the app by themselves, don't they? And then you have to wait. Yeah. I'll, you know what? I'll tweet it or I'll – whatever.
You can text me and we'll report. I'm just curious. I don't know if you get a benefit for being being a good-looking woman who's on Howard Stern's top 10 most underrated Ronnie of the limo driver list, or whether you get a negative because I'm a 4.88 and I don't know if that's good. Dub, have you looked up? Is there any sort of idea based on ratings where that like breaks down?
Yeah, I'm seeing on one of those kind of question websites or whatever you want to call them, 4.8 or higher is apparently good/average. So I think
good/average is a broad category.
Well, that's all I'm seeing here.
Yeah, no, I mean, would you agree that good/average is a broad? I mean, like if your kid came home and you were like, you got a teacher report and they were like, how's your kid doing? They're in the average to good category is like a pretty broad category. Like, I don't know that I would agree that those two words should be put together. I mean, I understand that they would have that because they're in some way trying to avoid offending anybody because the last thing they want is for people to not be able to go. But this in and of itself is pretty funny, I think.
Yeah, my app is still downloading. This is unbelievable. I'm having phone problems as well. I didn't even know that we were rated. I didn't know that I was rated on Uber, which is kind of disturbing.
You're not going to be top 10 most underrated on Uber. I tell you that. Like you've already had your positive results.
There you go. Yes, I'm good for the year. I made the top 10 list. I'm number 6.
There you go. Boom. Number 6. Who was number 1?
See, I don't know because I think she's on the Price Is Right. I don't watch that. I don't know what the top 10 list is. I know where I am. That's all I care about is where I am. Just outside
right.
the top 5.
I understand. I don't think
story
I'll ever
of my
get
life. Just outside the top 5.
just outside. What did your husband think? Did he think you were criminally underrated?
Yes, of course. He told me that.
Did you, by the way, what did you guys do for, I know Valentine's Day was the day of the Daytona 500. Did you guys do anything special for Valentine's Day?
No, I left my kids some gifts. I mean, I was out of the house at 5:15 on Sunday and didn't walk back until 2. So we celebrated on Monday. My sons and I just watched a movie all day on Monday. The weather here wasn't very good. And so we kind of just laid around and I was exhausted and watched some movies and hung out. But, they gave me, what did I get? I got flowers. I'm not a big gift person. Like I like to give more than I like to, you know, like I like to give gifts. So they got me flowers, and then my one son wrote me a poem, which this mommy's heart just burst, and that was about it. My husband gave me some flowers, so we're good. We're building a house, so every day is Valentine's Day. I'm getting boxwoods and magnolia trees for Valentine's Day.
How much time have you spent on the details of the house?
Oh,
like,
everything.
Are you intimately involved in every single day? That seems overwhelming to me.
Yes, no, I did not use a designer, and my husband was the general contractor on it. So we built, he did the CAD work on it. He designed the entire house. He was over here every single day. You know, I mean, yes, every single aspect of this house is he and myself, like nothing else. We had no input from anyone else.
That is, that's pretty wild. So when are you actually going to be able to move into a fully complete... You're in.
We're
now you're focused November entirely 1st. On the outside boxwoods and everything else.
So we have like the red clay here in North Carolina. I don't know what your dirt looks like in Tennessee, but everything here is red clay. So if you don't have landscaping, you literally walk around in like a red clay mud. And I've got two boys and three dogs. And so every day you're just like wiping down feet. And so we're trying to get these trees and our grass and all of this stuff in as quickly as we can. But yeah, that's what we're working on right now is landscaping. We're in landscaping, you know what.
Last question for you here. The Daytona 500 starts off. It has a rain delay. What is the expectation for this weekend in NASCAR? Is it where are you guys going next? And what was the general feedback, notwithstanding the rain delay, for the launch of this new season? Did it feel normal? I watched. Seemed like there was a lot of crowd there. Not a full crowd yet, but at least trending in that direction.
The drivers said it felt weird because they weren't allowed to have their families with them in the infield. They're still doing, you know, and I think team owners were allowed to send, you know, a small amount of people. So, and there was only like 25,000 fans, where usually the Daytona 500 is completely sold out. So I think from that standpoint, yes, it did feel very weird still, but certainly a lot more normal than it has in a long time. In the studio, it felt great. You know, we you know, we're obviously social distanced, and we wear masks when we're walking around and not on set, but it did feel like there was a little bit of normalcy. As far as this weekend, we actually go back to Daytona. So we normally do the second race of the season out in California in Fontana, but because of the strict rules for COVID, they altered it. And so we're doing the road course at Daytona this weekend, which is what they ran in the Clash on Tuesday night last week. And there are rain tires. So if it rains this weekend, we are good to go. They're going to throw those rain tires on those babies and they're going to race. And then next week, we'll still be in the state of Florida. We're going to go down to Homestead Miami Speedway. So we're spending 3 weeks in Florida, but we're racing, and that's the most important thing.
Outstanding stuff as always, Shannon Spake. We will talk to you next week.
Awesome. Talk to you later, Clay.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
My thanks to Shannon Spake. We started off the show talking about the reported interest from the Carolina Panthers in Deshaun Watson, which I think is a fascinating story with everything that's at play there. But some positive news as we finish off the first hour of the Thursday edition. Pitchers and catchers have officially reported in many different spring training facilities and sites out there. And we are close to being underway with a normal Major League Baseball season. Now, I don't know how much attention you guys have been paying to this, but there's been a lot of debate about how many games would be played, what exactly was going to be going on. We know the NFL finished their full season in complete normalcy. I think Major League Baseball is going to be the next sport to finish their season in complete normalcy. I really do. Because I was looking around the other day, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit to start off the second hour of the show as well. But I talk about the fact that I've come back to baseball through the eyes of my 10-year-old who has become, unfortunately for him, because he doesn't know the history of October, a big Atlanta Braves fan. And so during the 60-game season, we had Braves games on in my house every single day. And so I got kind of into the rhythm of a baseball season. And for those of you out there who are big baseball fans, you know what I'm talking about. You constantly are thinking, oh, yeah, there's another game tonight. Let me go ahead and flip it on. It becomes a part of your ritual at home in a way that, frankly, other sports don't, because football is easy to keep up with. Hey, we got a game on Saturday. We got a game on Sunday, occasionally the Monday or the Thursday night version. But when you only got 1 3-hour game to keep up with, it's hard to forget. Like, you definitely kind of keep that on the radar. But for baseball, it's a very much pattern-based sport. And I liked the 60-game season because everything mattered a great deal. But I also like the idea of the Cactus League and everybody in Florida coming in and starting to get back into a rhythm of normalcy. And I was watching a couple of days ago the reports on the vaccine out there. And the reports are now that by the end of July, every single person who wants a COVID vaccine will have one. That's based on the pace in which we are vaccinating people right now. That by the end of July, regardless of who you are, if you want to go get a COVID vaccine, they are going to be available and they will be readily apparent, and it will be easy to get out and go get your vaccine. And I thought what was so interesting about this is, how quickly are things going to get back to normal? Because I went on the Atlanta Braves schedule and I was like, you know what? I want to go ahead and get tickets, even though right now they're just selling distance seating, right? So normal. I talked about it on the show. I went to 6 or 7 NFL games. I went to a college football game. I also went to a college basketball game. Like, the NBA is starting to bring back their fans. Everything in many respects is getting back to normal. To me, baseball starting to play a 162-game schedule is going to be the next level of normalcy. Because coming back for spring training, getting back 162 games is just so many. And there's so much travel associated with baseball and everything else. Getting that back to some form of normalcy is, I think, a major sign for sports being back and everything COVID being in the rearview mirror. And I think that's what's going to happen. I really do. I think by the summer, and I've been saying this for a while, and people out there are like, oh, there's no way this is going to end up happening. You're crazy. I think by the summer, we will be back to 100% full stadiums, to the extent that people want to buy tickets, right? And I think that's what I'm going to talk about to start off the second hour of the program. How quickly are people going to come back? Not for health-related concerns, but does sports have a challenge going forward with the number of guys and girls out there who ordinarily would have been diehard fans and have started to shift in terms of what their expectations for normalcy are? Have some of the habits of people going to games changed? I think that's going to be one of the big questions that is looming out there as we go forward. I encourage you, by the way, to go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a single moment of the show. All you have to do is search out my name, Clay Travis. Search out OutKick. You'll be glad that you did it. Up next, big question for you. With fans returning, will you go? This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.